Buddhist Summer School, Sunday, 11th August, 1985. Venerable members of the Sangha and fellow students of the Dhamma, yesterday we noted the emphasis which the Buddha laid on faith in him, in the Dhamma, and in the Sangha. The bhikkhus spoke of unwavering loyalty to the Exalted One. The climactic point of faith and loyalty is well illustrated in the fifth volume of the Samyutta Nikaya. This is an extremely interesting example. Anatha Pindika, the very wealthy householder who was a benefactor of orphans, a very generous supporter of the Sangha, and a most loyal devotee of the Buddha, fell seriously ill. So he sent a messenger to the Venerable Sariputta to beg him to come to his sick bed out of compassion. Sariputta, accompanied by Ananda, complied with the request. On hearing that his pains were increasing, Sariputta recounted Anatha Pindika's virtues and said to him, "If you were to bethink you of your unwavering loyalty to the Buddha, your pains would be allayed in an instant." Sariputta repeats this a second and a third time, substituting the Dhamma and the Sangha for the Buddha. Then he adds that unlike the uneducated many folk who have wrong knowledge, wrong release, Anatha Pindika had right knowledge, right release. So he says, "If you were to bethink you of your right knowledge, right release, in a moment your pains would be allayed." Thereat, says the text, in a moment the pains of the householder Anatha Pindika were allayed. This perhaps may be the very first example of a faith cure in world history. Then Anatha Pindika served Sariputta and Ananda with a meal from his own cooking pot. After the meal, Sariputta thanked him with wise verses, ending with these words: "The wise should cultivate these three things: faith, virtue, and clear seeing of the Dhamma, bearing the Buddha's message in his mind." Then he rose from his seat and went away. Ananda related this to the Buddha, who praised Sariputta. Now, whence comes the power, the curative energy in a faith cure? It comes from Vijnanam Anidarsanam Anantam Sabbato Pabam. Pure consciousness is the creative energy which, functioning through the purified psyche, heals the disease. I'll repeat the meaning of that sentence. Consciousness, which is characterless, endless, everywhere shining. If I am not mistaken, in Huang Po's teaching, mind, the Buddha, and the Absolute are regarded as an identity. Each of those words is indefinable, for it represents transcendence. And who can define transcendence? We can and do talk about mind, about transcendence, just as we talk about God or the Absolute or the Buddha. And yet, whilst it is in fact a mistake to talk in this strain, that very talk can make it clear to us that silence is golden. Mistakes represent our unenlightened states. But if we care for truth, if we love the Buddha, which is tantamount to a true love of wisdom, our mistakes can be stepping stones on the path to enlightenment. It is unwise to condemn ourselves or to hate ourselves on account of our mistakes. Hence, in meditation, we are advised to direct metta and karuna, loving kindness and compassion, to our own self first. I don't know whether any other religious discipline quite does this, to direct loving kindness and compassion to one's own self first. Serious talk, earnest thought, deep consideration could produce that flash of profound insight which may sometimes awaken us so intensely that we hear the silence. When thought is transcended and we are not asleep or unconscious, pure consciousness, the holistic consciousness, is alight. And that talk which culminated in this awakening and the talk given afterwards by the awakened one is prophetic speech, the creative word, the logos. It is as if the creative word is crystallized consciousness, primordial creative energy materialized. This consciousness, this mind in creative action, is the healing power, the miracle producer. Miracle to me, the ordinary mortal, but it is the constant creative action in eternity for the one whose vijnana has been transmuted into holistic consciousness. In other words, the one in whom the evolution of discriminative, separative, analytical consciousness has culminated in holistic consciousness. Consider also the word anidassanam, which means without attributes, characterless, signless, hence unrecognizable by ordinary discriminative consciousness, by the brain, not perceivable through the activity of any of the senses. This vijnanam anidassanam is the emptiness, the void, which potentially holds within itself and is also identical with the plenitude. In the Rig Veda, it is said that Daksha sprang from Aditi and Aditi sprang from Daksha. Aditi means free, unbounded, infinite, the boundless heaven as compared with the finite earth. That is Aditi, and Aditi is anthropomorphized as a goddess. Aditi is the mother of the gods. All the gods emerge out of Aditi, the boundless. Daksha means able, competent, intelligent, and the name carries with it the idea of creative power. Aditi represents the void, the infinite eternal, and is feminine, the mother principle. Daksha is the differentiating, generative power, the father principle, and represents the plenitude. Aditi, the void, and Daksha, the plenitude, are interdependent and constantly interactive, generating and regenerating each other. There's an immense amount hidden in this teaching in the Rig Veda, but it needs a lifetime of meditation. Associate holistic consciousness mainly with the void. Vijnana, discriminative consciousness, with the plenitude. The void is the plenitude in its transparent state. So it seems or appears empty to vijnana, to discriminative consciousness. But in fact, it is the constant light shining in the darkness, but is uncomprehended by us. It is the primordial knowingness or consciousness, which is nondescript. It is unmoving, that is, not turbulent. Vijnana is constantly in turmoil. It is immutable, that is, unchanging, because it is absolute, the one alone. The Buddha corroborates this by adding the word anantam, endless, implying beginningless, hence eternal. I am not holding a brief for eternalism in the sense of time as an everlasting flow of change involving birth and death. Eternity is nondescript. We experience its shadow as temporality. That is, time and time's flow, which is dukkha. Because our constrictive vijnana distorts eternity into time, just as it distorts infinity into measurable space. Because of this distortion of the infinite eternal by our vijnana, we experience the limitation named measurability. Hence, we have measurable space and time, finite and temporal things and entities, birth and death, Maya and Dukkha. All finitude and temporality was transcended by the Buddha by his enlightenment. So he was able to affirm, light arose, and to say to Upaka, omniscient am I. This omniscience does not belong to the sphere of vijnana. It belongs to and is itself vijnanam anidassanam anantam sabbato padam, which is the Buddha's equivalent to the Upanishadic Atma. You see, rather a sad thing occurred. The Upanishads, particularly the pre-Buddhistic Upanishads, clearly said the Atma is infinite, it is eternal. It is birthless, ageless, without decay, undying, sorrowless, and stainless. when, if you study the Ariyaparyesana Sutta carefully, you will see it's said that the Buddha speaks of himself, I sought the unborn, the unaging, the undecaying, the undying, the sorrowless, the stainless. The identical words in the Upanishads, you see. What did he seek then? But what the Upanishads meant by the word Atma. He sought and found, and he called it the deathless. Whoso is interested in this should study the Mandukya Upanishad carefully and meditatively. Study meditatively means to study without writing long essays in your own mind with the activity of the brain about what you are meditating. Just let the brain quieten down. And if and when it becomes absolutely wordless, it has stopped talking. How many schoolmasters have thundered out, stop talking? You see, when the brain stops talking, then there is no interference from our psychical conditioning with the pure mind at work, enlightening one. So that is the meaning of studying meditatively. Meditate also on the meaning, significance, and implications of infinity, eternity, and immortality. Above all, realize the supreme silence, of which the first stage is entered in the second jhana. The truth in the vijnanic sphere is samvrit satya, relative truth. The truth of the holistic consciousness is supreme or absolute truth, paramartha satya. I am not using and never can use words like supreme and absolute in the sense of finality. For in the transcendent context of infinity and eternity, there is no such thing as finality. That which is beginningless, birthless, and is therefore also endless, has nothing in it which is final. Finality belongs to our limited sphere of analytical, separative, isolative, discriminative consciousness. All such words are convenient for talking purposes. Yet they are useful for suggesting that which is quite beyond the reach or understanding of vijnana. Now take the last two words, sabbato pabam, everywhere shining. Everywhere. The word represents infinity. We are confined because of vijnana to measurable space, for space to us is the container, a container which is capable of limited extension, the box crammed full with 1,000,000,000 galaxies. But if, because of extended powers of seeing by means of more sensitive instruments, new galaxies come into view, our container space is even more crammed full. Yet this fullness, which has now come within the sphere of vijnana, is not the fullness, the void, of which it has been said in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad and also in the Atharva Veda, that is full. This is full. very significant to talk of the particular and the separate and the isolated as full. Because everything which we regard as separate and particular is a microcosm representing totally the whole of the macrocosm. From fullness, fullness proceeds. Abstract fullness out of fullness, even then, fullness itself remains. Now, this sort of thing has been said, has been taught by perfected holy ones who realized the full stage, the perfect stage. And therefore, we can see what a depth is involved in such statements. Mere analysis will never reveal its meaning. You have to become silent. And if you succeed, even to a little degree, you will get that flash of transcendence, of transcendent consciousness, which completely negates our ordinary everyday consciousness without destroying it. The reason why our vijnana fails to conceive this is that vijnana is unable, until it realizes holistic consciousness by living the holy life, to shake free of the limits imposed by the circumscribed sphere of sense impressions. Constituted as we are sensitive only to a limited frequency range. Even this is too much for normal living. So the brain and nervous system eliminate a good deal of it by a system of filtering and classifying devices as irrelevant buzz. And the relevant information is processed into manageable shape before it is presented to consciousness. This is to the brain. Added to this is the fact that it is interpreted by a brain that is heavily conditioned by, one, a 600 million year evolution, two, upbringing and education, three, our present society, four, the vast accumulated knowledge gathered through a multi-millennial intellectual development. All these have conditioned us in such a way that it shuts out transcendence. Vijnana is in thrall to limited selfhood, to microcosmic individuality. Yet this very microcosmic individuality is the divine egg, or if you prefer it, the golden womb, the Hiranyagarbha, out of which emerges the full-grown, matured individuality, the indivisible, transcendent unity of the one alone, the all-enlightened Sammasambuddha, no longer separate from the void which is the eternal light, the fullness, the pure plenitude. You are that fullness. Each and every one of you, in essence, is that eternal light. I am that plenitude. Each and every one of us is that plenitude. All of us who are this void plenitude are inconceivably rich when we are truly empty of greed, hate, and delusion. For this holistic consciousness, which shines everywhere, is the infinity, which is not merely space as we understand it at present. This infinity is the Akasha of the Veda, the Akasa of the Buddha. And since void and fullness are but two names for the same reality, the one total reality, you and I, the microcosmic cells, are in eternal union. Only Vijnana is not awake to that. And each microcosmic self is in complete relationship with and is totally subsumed by the whole macrocosmic self. Behold the unbroken holiness of transcendence. How wicked, and even worse, how stupid are those members of the human species who live in loveless lust and hate and delusion with their fellow humans, in disharmony with nature, our silent, ever enduring, ever nourishing mother, the El Shaddai of the ancient Hebrew wisdom, the supreme, presented as El Shaddai. You know, there are so many names, Elohim, Yahweh, El Shaddai, Adonai, and so on, in the Judaic tradition. El Shaddai is really the feminine element, the mother element, nurturing. And yet, the Jews as a race insist upon Yahweh being just Mr. No Mrs. Let us consider now the wise words and verses gifted to Anathapindika by Sariputta. Sariputta, whom the Buddha himself proclaimed was the son of his own mouth. This comes in the Itivuttaka, in the Majjhima, Anupada Sutta. And who would be the co-leader with Moggallana of the Sangha when he himself, the Buddha, was no longer here? The wise should cultivate these three: faith, virtue, and clear seeing of the Dhamma. Let us take the clear seeing of the Dhamma today. We usually come across the Dhamma first through the spoken or written word, later on by observing the action or behavior which exemplify those words. When we hear or read them, do we understand their meaning in its fullness or its exactitude as it exists in the mind of the speaker or writer? Or do we understand it in our own particular way, which is usually, perhaps always, different from the mental content in the mind of the speaker or writer? This point is well illustrated in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The devas, men, and asuras, the demons, dwelt with their father Prajapati, lord of creatures, lord of creation, as students of the holy life. At the end of their studentship, each group asked their teacher for a parting instruction. All he did was to thunder out, "Duh!" And immediately afterwards asked, "Did you understand?" The devas, the gods, who usually are somewhat unruly and overbearing, answered, "Yes, you said damyata, be restrained." The men, avaricious, somewhat selfish, answered, "Yes, you said datta, give, be generous." The demons, cruel, answered, "Yes, you said dayadvam, be compassionate." And to each group, Prajapati said, "Yes, you did understand." The last sentence of that section in the Upanishad states, one should practice this same triad, dhammam, danam, dayam. Be restrained, be generous, be compassionate. Centuries later, the Buddha taught nekamma, dana, karuna. Let us consider compassion for a few moments. Compassion is deep tenderness for another, especially if he is in severe or inevitable suffering or misfortune, which becomes one's own suffering through commiseration with the other. This commiseration is not just pity for a sufferer who is felt to be weak or inferior, nor simply sympathy where there is the feeling that the sufferer is an equal in situation or circumstances to oneself. So we see that compassion has an intensity and all-inclusiveness not quite characteristic of pity or sympathy or condolence. What is my ordinary response to one in suffering? It is a perfunctory, "Oh, the poor devil," or his bad luck, or if I am a conceited egotist, I'm saying this out of my own living experience in my young days, cruelly superior, I say, "Serve him right. Why was he such a stupid fool as to bring it all on himself?" Not even the shadow of compassion here. Now the Buddha is said to be the embodiment of harmlessness, ahimsa, of karuna, compassion. Matricheta says of the Buddha in his Shatapanchasya Shataka, "Which shall I first extol, you or the Mahakaruna by which you have allowed yourself to be held in samsara, although you know its faults so well?" This is the 59th shloka in that work. Again, in the 105th shloka, he says, "You have affection even for the hostile, benevolence even for the fallen, tenderness even to the cruel. Wonderful is your greatness." And again, in shloka 122, "You overcame the revilers by forbearance, the malicious by blessing, the slanderers by truth, the wicked by metta, loving kindness." Compassion then is love in action, fellowship in suffering. What kind of a being was the Buddha? Verily, a perfected holy one, and the virtue of which he was the embodiment, and the Dhamma which he taught, which was and is his priceless bequest to mankind, are, like him, holy, perfect, and beautiful. Now, just as it takes a musician in whom the inborn soul of music is astir to clearly hear and understand the music of the great masters, it needs the faultless insight and reverent appreciation of the wayfarer to see, to be clearly conscious of this true and good and lovely Dhamma of the all-enlightened Holy One who was Samma Sambuddha. Am I, the ordinary man in the world, such a wayfarer? I have seen 8 decades flow past like a stream, sometimes turbulent, sometimes turgid, and only at rare times crystal clear, shining with heaven's own light. And in each decade, it was necessary, very fortunately, to outgrow what was believed in the earlier decades to be clear seen. One good example from real life will suffice to illustrate this. In the first noble truth, it is declared that jati is dukkha. Jati is translated as birth or rebirth. It also means the conditioned state, which of course is a consequence, or at any rate is concomitant with birth. I have always preferred this connotation to birth, and still more so to rebirth, as ordinarily understood. But think, without birth, would we have had a Buddha or Christ, a Moses or Krishna, or Zarathustra or Milarepa, or the 500 Paccheka Buddhas mentioned by the Buddha in the Isigili Sutta? Would we have had them without birth? Recall too the Buddha's teaching of how difficult it was and fortunate to obtain human birth, for only the human can realize Nibbana. Therefore, jati as biological birth cannot possibly or reasonably be regarded as dukkha. But I see a simple and rational meaning for birth as dukkha in relation, for the word birth that is, in relation to religious living. The Buddha showed the way which leads to the extinction of dukkha and enables us to fulfill a main purpose of our existence, namely, that unshakable freedom of mind in which one knows that destroyed is jati, done is what was to be done. There is no more of living thus or thus. Naparam ittattaya. That is, living thus or thus as conceived and lived in the worldly way, here in the present state of becoming. But if I continue to disregard the way of virtue and live constantly in the way that springs out of greed, hate, and delusion, I shall give birth again and again throughout each day to all that is ill, to dukkha. It is this birth, this rebirth, which is dukkha, but which is extinguished, utterly extinguished, by treading the way of virtue. But you have to tread that way to the end. Here and now, in my 9th decade, I have seen this clearly. Slow learner. I trust we can see now how the clear seeing of the Dhamma is no light task. Actually, the true clear seeing, the clearest seeing in which crystal clarity is pure clarity alone with no crystal to distract attention, is identical with the all enlightenment, with the light of transcendence unobstructed by separative and isolative self-consciousness, and no darkening shadow is present. Also, perhaps, we can now better appreciate the Buddha's statement to Subhuti in the Prajnaparamita. Just enlightenment is the path. Just the path is enlightenment. And I think I said the other day, our existential being, the Nama Rupa, is the path. Consciousness is the traveler through that path. So too, in relation to the jhanas and samapattis, we may say, from clear enlightenment to clearer enlightenment, or from preliminary flashes of enlightenment to the permanent full enlightenment, the Sammasambuddha state, or from a succession of minor satoris, which come and go occasionally, to the immutable, complete satori. Such, as far as I can see, is the clear seeing of the Dhamma.